Okay. Next, we have Léon Mourad, who is Professor Emeritus at the French National Center for Scientific Research, CNRS.
CNRS, but I am. Thank you so much for your nice words and for the invitation. The paper, Ironies of Technical Assistance During the Interwar Period, is about the challenges for aid agencies of broadening their reach and the difficulties they experienced. Liberals of the David Mitrani's tribe celebrate this aspiration to universalism. Technical, non-controversial matters offered an entering wedge for the furtherance of interstate cooperation. The story I am telling here is of the deliberate scaling down of expectations, the recognition by aid agencies of their own limits. Top-down, large-scale programs developed from abroad receded in the interwar period in favor of grassroots, developmentalist local investments. A number of factors might explain such a shift in the giving relation. The disruption of indigenous health regime, Greece, Central Europe, and the corresponding resilience of outdated bureaucracies, conflicting priorities among the aid agencies. The LNHO disposed to run whenever it is whistled to by any government, while the Rockefeller extended its helping hand only to countries both anxious and able to helping themselves. Internal tension between positing a single path to modernity, the American appetite for bigger and better, or charting different paths that would embed lasting paying off programs in the field. Let's quickly see two cases, Greece and Yugoslavia, which both illustrate the difficult art of assisting without disrupting. Greece may be seen as a textbook case for the giver-receiver pathologies. The strange thing is that, unable to take it from the inside, aid agencies in charge of state building yielded to the oversimplification of national character studies. Essentialist, prejudiced, the League's 1929 report failed to see anything in the Greek mind that was not the face of the opposite. The trouble here is that state building or nation building yielded to character building, an overambitious remit for birds of passage. Greece, as it seems, was outside the pale, a disconcerting Erewhon in Europe, but not of Europe, and it was described as being 600 years behind modern development in sanitation. The riddle, the Greek enigma posed to Western observers, lie here, not in its alleged primitivism, but in its disinterest in moving away from its primitiveness. Such a standoffish attitude and cultural retrenchment mirrored the miserable self-image the nation had of itself in the wake of the Asia Minor disaster, 1922. Indeed, aid agencies were in dire need of realizing that the world is not so plastic as they fantasize, and that backwardness is sometimes a bulwark, a protection against self-obliteration. Yugoslavia looks like Greece's reverse image. Both countries in the wake of World War I were in a complete hygienic illiteracy, but while Greece, as a distance of a decade, had not yet started in the field of hygiene, 300 health centers, malaria stations, etc., redressed in Yugoslavia a self-perceived weakness. "You are a magician," the Rockefeller president wrote Andrea Stampar, their stubborn inventor. A distant cousin of the Russian Narodniki, the Balkan beer, outlined to the special intention of peasant states a barefoot hygiene devoid of any Western complex. Belgrade and mostly Zagreb had not tried to copy everything done elsewhere, while touring the Balkans, Winslow captured this display of third world assertiveness. Stampa has been wise in attacking the first problems first, scarlet fever on tracks, and not attempting to transport advanced procedures into a primitive country. Such a departure from the standard made sense of a policy devised to be implemented at a low price. Stampa's Yugoslavia, in order to be herself, rejected the West and became the West. That was enough to make the most deviant peace, cherished as the most significant native development found in European countries. I spoke of scaling down. Let's have a quick look to this wisdom of limits on two cases, Central Europe and China. Post-war aftermath are replete with crash programs. Let's only remember of Prague, June 1919. They want to make their country a small US, akin to a car or a TV set. A particular health device could be abstracted from its context and conveyed elsewhere. No surprise then that results were not forthcoming. Americanizing European public health, herein lies the greatest danger, some Rockefeller officials thus worried. Mike Gunn, for instance, was far from convinced that American methods were the best for Europe. This was a fatal blow to the prevailing diffusionist viewpoint. Indeed, Central Europe had hard realities conspired to turn grandiose schemes into a more affordable program of civil service reform. Aid agencies, faced in the former Habsburg lands some sort of Dickensian circumlocution offices. Plagued with antiquated methods, part-time occupation, low salaries, and pestiferous politicians, health services were not worthy of the name. To oust old-timers, eradicate German influence, and get officialdom in line turned out to be out of reach. Accordingly, the Rockefeller sponsored as a kind of flanking movement, sponsored schools and institutes of hygiene as keys not only to revamping ossified state machineries, but to drying them up. We are American transplants, though they were, these schools kept their own personality. You know, the Zagreb one, which was adorned with a peasant's university of the Danish sort, and who delivered courses in housekeeping, cooking, child hygiene, weaving. We are far, very far from the Rockefeller priorities, clinical teaching and strong laboratories, other sensitivities, other agendas. What is striking in this loosely spread constellation is that school and institutes form a group, a single sound chamber, eager to undertake joint studies. No mean feat in an age of increasing fragmentation. What's hard to miss is the echo effect between the ever-extending inquiries which Geneva was frantically launching in regard to the impact of the Great Depression and those carried out in Budapest, Prague or Warsaw on household budgets, calories, vitamins, milk, flies, diphtheria. Synchronism was perfect. So was the West coming to the East or the East to the West? Fragile as it was, the Danubian constellation might not only have been a bulwark, but the generator of some health European identity in the making. Scaling down was occurring in China too. It has been said that public health in the last century ought to be seen as a chapter of international relations. Technical assistance in the case at hand is not an end in itself, but an entering wedge to revamp both China's ability and will to resist Japan. China was but another name for universalization, not a small remit, while the most general sentiment in Beijing was hatred of the foreigner and the League. Faced by passive if not hostile, recipient state, aid agencies were challenged to grasp the insistence of a tradition-bound society on its uniqueness and intransitivity. The very term international has a sinister meaning in China, Reichman, the medical director of the League, reported. This made the incentive to plug in China'sness all the stronger. While standards of excellence were abruptly left aside, the Rockefellers switched to China-fy narrow, monitorable objectives. Giving super medicine fell out of favor. A serious shift. As for 1936, both the Rockefeller and the LNHO claimed to remain content with backing Chinese efforts that were 60% efficient rather than Western ones that were 100%. Both kissed goodbye to forced march modernization. Both kept high-tech medicine at bay. Both pointed out that China were to work out its own salvation, even if that meant being saved slowly. Which brings us to the final question. Can transnational expertise assist slow-moving societies in recovering a sense of their national identity? The answer, with China still in mind, is yes and no. Yes, because its success in recapturing control over maritime customs, postal communications, and salt revenues are hard to dissociate from the multifaceted involvement of the League, the Rockefeller, and the Milbank. However modest they may seem, their non-partisan advice, loans, and technical training secured both the containment of foreign power and the attainment of foreign expertise. No, insofar as the conviction that the work had to be done by the Chinese themselves gained ground, moving from the claims that China ought to be assisted from abroad to the assertion that it was bound to modernize on its own. Forced into acculturation in order to survive, China acquired some marks of modernity, but rejected the view that modernization means convergence. By 1939, the League was championing a new paradoxical approach according which the best assistance it could give was that which most quickly brought about its own termination. Meanwhile, it had to act behind the scenes, anonymously, so to speak. My interest in China or in Yugoslavia stems from an impression of them as places where international bodies reinvented themselves, places, to put it succinctly, where a culture-free model of expertise transfer fell away. Localness, plasticity, and awareness of the contextual and the vernacular, in China, the interwar health establishment took a leaf from the warning that cultures could be extinguished through excessive assimilation. Indeed, the old positivist faith in some spontaneous universalization of the best was dying. Attraction and repulsion mingled, the recipient state would not rely on foreign input if it did not assume, at least in part, the appearance of a local German product. Most telling was the increasing effort to hide the foreign origin of the foreign gift, to give it a native mask. A strange reversal. Transnational experts had striven to universalize super medicine, challenged to grasp the insistence of tradition-bound societies on their uniqueness. Aid agencies realized the foolishness of stimulating felt needs and agreed that values are more or less combinable. In other words, they ceased to ignore or transcend cultural difference and strove to build upon it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Very thought-provoking.